We're holding on Hey Ahmed Bey's 11 lines from the bottom, the line begins Yush. We're in the middle of discussing the fact, the dinim about marking graves or areas of tumah. The Mishnah mentioned that that's one of the things that you're allowed to do during Chol HaMoed, so we're discussing the dinim of it in general. By the way, it also mentions that concept at the beginning of Masechta Shkalim. We're going to bring the Mishnah later on. We're going to bring the Mishnah later on in the Sugya. And in fact, at that time when we learned Shkalim, Yerushalmi, which is also part of Daf Yomi, so last year Pesach time, we also dealt with this issue of Tzion Kvaris a little bit as well. But of course, as usual, more briefly in the Yerushalmi than it was than it is in the Bavli. Okay. So we said that there's a few different kinds of cases where a field is called a Beis HaPras, one of them being a field where you know there's a grave in there, but you lost track of where it is. So now such a thing is Metamei Ba'ohel, because a grave is Metamei Ba'ohel. So therefore, that's the kind of thing that you would mark with plaster around it so that people don't go in there who need to stay Tahor or that are carrying food that needs to stay Tahor. Then we had a case of a field where there was a grave in there, but then it was plowed up, and now bones are assumed to be scattered all over the field. That's usually the definition of what we call a Beis HaPras for most purposes, and there's no problem with Tumas Oihel, because the little fragments of bone are each going to be small enough, they'll be large enough that each individually can be metame. They'll be generally the size of a grain of barley or more, but not big enough to be metamed ba'oihel, where for that you need roiv binyan or roiv minyan or a whole skull, etc. So that kind doesn't need to be marked with plaster because it's not metamed ba'oihel anyway. So that's what the Gemara asks. Sodash and nechash ba'kever le'boi tziyun. Are you telling me that a field where the grave was plowed over does not need to be marked with plaster? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa. If a person finds a field that was marked, so he sees there's plaster around the edges of the field, the Enyadur Mativa, he doesn't know, so what's the story with this field? What exactly is the problem with it? So it depends. Yesh Ba'ilonis, if there are trees in the field, Biadurasha Ovad Ba'kever, Biadurasha Nechresh Ba'kever, if there are trees in it, then we know that a grave was plowed in that field, Ein Ba'ilonis, and if there are no trees in it, then we know that a grave was lost in it. Now, what's the connection between trees and a grave being plowed up or whatever? So there's a number of different explanations. Rashi says that the difference is that if it was that in order to grow trees over there, we're talking about the pastures, fruit trees, it would have to be that the ground was plowed up. So therefore, if you find fruit trees over there, then it means that it was previously plowed up. Well, in that case, then it can't be that the problem is sada sha'ova ba'kever. It can't be the problem is that a grave is just lost or misplaced in that field. It has to be that it was sada sha'nechresh ba'kever, where it was plowed up, and now there's no problem with tumas oil. There's several other explanations. Tosfos points out that there's actually a different braisa that says that when you have sada sha'ovad ba'kever, you're not allowed to plant trees in it. Where Tosfos says, in other words, we're talking about an area, a plot of land, where if it hadn't been for that, it would have been a perfectly suitable place to plant trees. And the Chachamim are saying you're not supposed to plant trees in it. For a couple of reasons we've shown him discuss. Based on those braises and on other gemaras, one is because you don't want people to come there very often. If you have fruit trees in there, people are going to come in there all the time to pick the fruit, and then they're going to end up becoming tamei, and we don't want to do that. The other reason is because the tree itself is going to create tumas oihel. You're going to have, again, you don't know in this, you if it's a sada sha'ovad ba'kever, so the grave could be anywhere in the field, wherever you planted the tree, it might end up that it's partly overshadowing the grave, and then you're going to walk under a different part of the tree and become tamei. There's other reasons as well. The Rambam gives a reason also because the roots of the tree are going to penetrate all the way down to the grave. So you don't want that. It would be bazillion for the mess. So therefore, that's another reason not to plant trees there. Anyway, if you don't find trees over there and the field is marked, then it must be that Ovad Ba'kever, that a grave is that there's not, it was never plowed up, but there is a grave someplace in there and you just don't know where it is. Whereas if you find trees in it, then for any of these reasons that we said, then you can assume that it was a sadash and nechrash bakever where a grave was plowed over. And the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad sheyehesham zaken ay talmud. That works only if you have an older Talmud Chacham or at least a young Talmud Chacham in that area, l'fisha ena kol bakiyin b'davar, because not everybody is familiar with this, meaning that if we say that the idea is that that the fact that there's trees shows that it was already plowed, then the point is the Zaken or the Talmud can confirm that that's in fact what happened, that the place was plowed up. As opposed to an Am HaAretz may not be familiar with that, with those dinim, and therefore may not be able to really speak about it coherently. According to the other explanations, the point is that the Zaken or the Talmud Chacham is the one who knows these dinim about what you're allowed and not allowed to do in such a field. So therefore, he'll make sure that they're using the field properly, and he won't allow them to plant trees in it unless if it was a sadash of a bakever. Anyway, the point is that we see we're talking about a field that was marked because we started out Sodom Mitzuyenes, and we have the case where there's trees in it, and we're saying it means that it was a field Chenechrash Bakever. Well, that means that such a field also needs to be marked. So what are you telling me it doesn't? The answer is Amar Papa Kitanyahi Besodash Ovad Bakever Bitsinua. So what we're talking about over there is a field where a kever was lost, and then they marked it. So now, they marked it because of the lost grave. So now, yesh ve'ilonis v'yadua shenechash bakever. Now, if we find trees in it that were planted in it after it was marked, then we know that it must have been plowed up. Ein ve'ilonis v'yadua she'ovad bakever. And if there's still no trees in it, then we know that it's still like it was before ovad bakever. But in other words, the point is that if to begin with, when we came to mark it, it was already a plowed up field, then we wouldn't need to mark it. But here we're talking about where it was marked, and then afterwards it was plowed up and trees were planted in it. Okay, so the Gemara asks, a different explanation, by the way, of Yesh Ba'ilonis and Ein Ba'ilonis. The Ravid offers an explanation that it means that if there were trees there and they were chopped down, so the fact that there were trees there and now they were chopped down is a very strong proof that what happened, the local Beis Din or the local Talmud Chacham or whatever, told them to chop them down. You're not supposed to have trees growing in such a place. Anyway, so the Gemara says, okay, the Leichush Duma Ilonis Migavai. Okay, but how do you know that it means that the entire field is that the entire field is the Makam Tumah? Maybe the trees are on the inside, the kever miberoi. Maybe the kever is towards the outside. In other words, how do you know? You're saying the place was plowed, but not necessarily was the entire area. Maybe not the entire area was plowed. Maybe only the area where the trees are growing. So let's say you have a couple of trees in the middle of the field. Fine. So somebody went one day and plowed that area and planted trees. How do you know that they necessarily plowed over the entire field where now you would consider the whole thing a Beis HaPras and not a Sada She'ovad Bakever anymore? And the answer is, like Ula says in a different context, that we're talking about when the trees are standing around the edges closer to the Shasarabim, the same thing we'd be talking about over here. So you're right. If there were only trees in the middle over there, you couldn't necessarily know from that the entire area was plowed up. You'd still have to be concerned, since this place started out as a Sodash Ovid Bakever, maybe the kever is still there on someplace along the edges close to the Shasarabim. But nobody buries in the Shasarabim, of course. So therefore, if the trees are standing around the edges of the field, necessarily, therefore, the trees are further out towards the edges, and the kever is necessarily either under them or further in than them, and therefore, whatever was plowed in order to plant the trees, and therefore, now, at this point, the grave was plowed over, and you don't have to worry about Tumas Oil anymore. Okay, the Gemara asks, still, the Dilma Tuma Megavai Ve'ilonis Meberoi. Fine, but still, then, in that case, the other way around. Okay, so then you'll have the kever is someplace in the middle of the field. The trees are only on the outside. So fine, somebody plowed only around the edges. You're telling me that now this entire field, you're allowed to consider a Sodash HaNechrash by kever and not have to worry about Tumas Oil anywhere you walk in it. Why? Who says they planted, who says they plowed the entire thing in order to plant the trees? And the answer is b'mesubachim. The answer is we're talking about where the trees are, where the trees are not just, there's not just one row of trees going around the edges. The trees are, the branches and the leaves of them are all mixed together. They're scattered around, they're scattered throughout the whole field, and the leaves of them even intertwine. So then, in that case, then necessarily they must have plowed the whole field for the trees, because what are they going to do? Just plow the individual areas where they're going to plant the trees? They're not going to do that. But the pashtos, we can assume then that they would have planted the entire thing. The Ibarisema, or another answer you could say, which actually answers the everything that we said so far, Ein Marchik and Siyun Mamakam Tumah Shalai Lahafsidah Seretz Yisrael. In the Braisa that we quoted on Hayom Adbeis, that gave the basic rules about Siyun Kvaris, we said you don't put the mark too far away from the Tumah because you don't want to ruin Eretz Yisrael unnecessarily. You don't want unnecessarily that people are going to think that there's a certain area where you can't go even though there's no Tumah there actually. So we said you don't put the Tzion directly on top of the Tumah because you want the person to have a little advance notice so they don't all of a sudden, they're walking and all of a sudden they notice they're over a Mokum Tumah. But on the other hand, we said you don't put it too far away either. So here, since it's the field, meaning the edges of the field are marked, necessarily, it must mean that the whole field is tameh, or and now what we're saying is there's reason to assume that the whole field was plowed up, because otherwise they would have put the marker much closer. So if you have, for example, this scenario, the second scenario we were talking about, where you have trees only around the edges and the caver someplace in the middle, well, then they would have marked only the middle of the field. The fact that they marked the whole field indicates that the whole field was within the suffix of whether the grave was there. And now when it was plowed up, we have every reason to assume that the entire thing was plowed up. Or to be exact, to say it a little differently, Rashi says, since the mark is close to the trees, since the trees are on the outside and the mark is right around them, so evidently the Tumah is between the trees and therefore it was plowed for the sake of the trees. So even if the trees are only around the edges, we have every reason to assume that the entire area was plowed up. Okay, we said in the Braisa of Yehuda Omer Ad Shehesham Zokin Talmid, we said Rabbi Yehuda says this criteria of whether there's trees in the field or not only works if there's an old Talmud Chacham or young Talmud Chacham in the area. Because not everybody is familiar with these details of what's allowed and what's not allowed. Omar Abaye, Shmami, no? So Abaye says, you see from this, Braisa, you see from this statement of Rabbi Yehuda, a basic concept. Surva merabonon de'ika de'masa. When you have a young Talmud Chacham living in a city, kol mili demasa alei ramya, everything that's going on in the town is his responsibility. So it's his responsibility to be aware of what's going on in the town and to be able to guide the people in doing the right thing. Since he's a Talmud, since Rashi says he's a Talmud Baki, he's expert in Torah, then he has to make it his responsibility to be aware of what's going on in the town and to be able to tell the people appropriately what to do. In other words, that we see that from what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, because because otherwise you could say, what do you mean? So there's a Talmud Chacham in town, big deal. So he's sitting in the Beis Medrash all the time. He doesn't know what's going on in the world around him. So Abaye say, no, you see from Rabbi Yehuda's statement that he can say once there's a Talmud Chacham in town, then even a Talmud only, then we say that we can assume that what was done with the trees or without the trees he's aware of, means that he has a responsibility to be aware of such things. Okay. More dinim about Tzion Kvaris, Amar of Yehuda, Motze Evan Mitzvienes. If a person finds one stone that has plaster on it. Now, So what would that mean? So tachteh tomei, it means that the Tumah must be directly under the rock. Now, the Yerushalmi, actually, that we learned about this in Shkolim, says really you shouldn't have done that in the first place because the Tzion is supposed to be some distance away from the Tumah. It's not supposed to, we said before, it's not supposed to be directly on top of the Tumah. On the other hand, Rashi brings that maybe in this case it was allowed. Because after all, it's one thing when you have the plaster lying on the ground over there. You may not notice it until it's too late. But when you have it on top of a rock, The rock itself is a noticeable landmark. You're going to see it sometime before you reach it. So therefore, it would be fine to have the plaster directly on top of the rock, and it would mean that underneath the rock itself is there's Tumah. So if you find that, Tachtei HaTameh, then it means that underneath that rock there's Tumah. And therefore, it means stay away from overshadowing any part of that rock. Shtayim, if you find two rocks and they have plaster on them, so it depends. Im yesh sid beinehen, if there's plaster between them, beinehen tameh, then it means that the area between them is the area that's tameh. And then the reason why there's plaster on the tops of them is because we said you're supposed to have the tziyun is supposed to be a little bit further away from, it's supposed to also include a little bit of area beyond the tumah as well. So it means the actual tumah is located in the ground between the two rocks. And then you have plaster on the sides, just because you have that little extra overlap over there for people to be careful. The im ein sid beinehen, on the other hand, if there's no plaster between the two rocks, then beinehen tahar, then the area between them is tahar, and it means that only under the rocks themselves is tumah. So the Gemara asks, afakav deleka chodesh. So you're telling me that the area between them is tahar, even though we don't find marks of plowing. So why should that be? Bahatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Motze Evan Achas Mitsuyanes, if you find one rock marked with plaster, Tachtea Tameh, then like we said, it means that the Tumah is underneath it, Shtayim, and if you find two rocks with plaster on them, Im Yesh Choresh Beinehen, only if there's an area between them that's plowed, then Beinehen Tahar, only then is the area between them Tahar, because the fact that it was plowed makes it now, even if there was tumor over there, it's kevesh and nechrash. It's now was plowed over, and now the bones are scattered, so you don't have to worry about it. Or it means the fact that he plowed there means that he knew that there was no tumor there, and in the first place, v'im lav beinein tameh, and if not, then between them it's tameh. So we see that it's not just a question of whether there's plaster between them or not. You also have to factor in the question of whether the area between them was plowed. So why is Rabbi Huda saying that it seems to say that doesn't matter? It's only the question of whether there's plaster between them or not. Now you have Rashi's girsa is choresh, which again we said means an area that's plowed. Tosfos actually has a girsa, and so does some other Rishonim, that the word is not choresh, but rather cheres, which means a piece of earthenware. So if you have, so Rashi says, if you have, what it means, so Tosfos says, if you find earthenware, or chausis, which is ground up earthenware, if you find that over there, then that's actually meant to be a simen, that the area between them is tahar. It means that somebody deliberately put it there to show, unlike the rocks surrounding it, where there's tumah underneath them, this particular area is tahar. In other words, they didn't just leave it bare ground, because then you wouldn't know one way or the other. They bedavka put cheres or charsis there to demonstrate that. Tosfos also goes on to give a different way of looking at it, that if you have, as the Gemara is going to now talk about, if you poured a lot of plaster on top of the rocks, then you need then it means that you need to put chausis over there in order to demonstrate that the area between them is tahar. Tosfos goes on to discuss various other possibilities of what the deal is with the area between them. The Rambam has a different explanation of why he also has the Girsa Cheres. Why is it that if you find Cheres between them, it's Tahar? Because if you find plaster on the rocks and a piece of Cheres between them, the likelihood is that there was one time a building there, and that's why you still have plaster over there. And nothing to do with Tumah at all. Okay, so anyway, so the point is the Braisa is making a distinction between choresh or cheres, between the rocks or not, whereas Rabbi Yehuda seems to just be saying that the question is whether there's sid between them or not. The answer is Amar Papa, hocha k'shas sid shofoch al rashehen. What in the Braisa we're talking about where the sid was not just painted on the tops of the rocks, but there was actually poured onto the tops of the rocks. And now it's dripping down. It dripped down onto the sides. So it's not only you have some on the top of the rock, you also have something on the sides of the rocks. So, i'ika chodesh b'nehen, so only if there's chodesh or cheres, as the case may be, between them, then we can say b'nehen tahor. Then that gives us reason to say that the area between them is tahor. The emu machmas chodesh u d'ikbal, because we can say, what happened? Because you plowed the area in between them, therefore some of the plaster rubbed off as you were passing through over there with your plow, then some of the plaster from the top of the rock rubbed off and wound up on the sides. Or according to Tosfos, the vote would be that you put chausis over there, you put ground up earthenware to show that that area is tahor. And then when you poured the plaster, then some of it ended up getting, then some of it ended up sticking to the chausis. And therefore you could say that it means, therefore you could say that the area between them is in fact tahor. The Eloi, but if not, sid de bein and beinehu, then it means that you have plaster between the rocks as well, the tome, and therefore we have to assume that that area between them is tome. Okay. Another din about Siyun Kvaris, Omer Abasi, Meitzer Echad Metzuyon, if you have a field, if one border of the field is marked. Now, the way they used to do it in those days was that usually the border between one field and the next was actually a raised berm of earth. They would pile up earth on the sides of the field, and it would be a little bit of a raised bump that goes along the entire side of the field, sort of like a speed bump, that would mark off one field from the other. So if you find one such edge of a field marked, then we can assume that it means that only the area under that berm of earth is tame. The rest of the field we can assume is tahor. Shnayim, the same way, same thing, if two of the borders of the field are marked like that, same thing, hein tmein b'chalasara kula tahora, we can assume the same thing. Shloisha, hein tmein b'chalasara kula tahora. And the same thing, even if three borders are marked. Arba, but if you find all four of them marked, then there's no reason to assume that it's only the borders that are tame, then it's the other way around. Hein tahorin, then we would assume that the borders themselves are tahor b'chol asada kol atmeya, only the field that's inside of those borders is tamei. D'amamah, because as we said before, in machik and siyun m'makom tumah, we don't put the siyun too far away from the makom tumah shalor lahafsa, that's Eretz Yisrael, in order not to ruin Eretz Yisrael and declare parts of it tamei unnecessarily. So therefore, that would be why he marked all four borders, in order to mark that the entire field is tamei. On the other hand, if you have less than four borders marked, then we're saying that it means b'pashtus that only the borders themselves are tame, because if it meant that the whole field was tame, then they would have in fact marked all four. Now, as we said, you know, they have to go and replaster these every so often. The reason why we said in the Mishnah that you can do them chol hamoed is because after a while the plaster tends to wash away. So therefore, in other words, it's the local Beis Din's responsibility to make sure that these things are kept in good shape, such that you're able to use the presence or the absence of the plaster in order to know what's going on over here. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah of a Yotzin Af al Kalayim, we said that another thing you're allowed to do during Chol HaMoed is that you can go out and look and see if there are Kalayim in people's fields and deal with it. So the Gemara says, Kalayim b'chol HaShomoed nafkinen. So you're telling me that they go out during Chol HaMoed to check into that? Uriminu, I have a contradiction. The first Mishnah of Shkolim says, "Be'echad ba'Adar mashmien al Shkolim v'al Kalayim." On the first of Adar, they announce about the shekel, about the matzah shekel, as we learned in Megillah. Since they have to start offering the korbanos from Rosh Chodesh Nissan from the new money that comes in, therefore they have to collect that money during Adar. So therefore, they announce to the people beginning from Rosh Chodesh Adar to get ready to bring in their matzah shekel. Val Kilayim. They also announce about Kilayim that everybody should be going to their fields and checking whether Kilayim is growing over there, or there's a different explanation that it means we announce to them, you're planting now, make sure you don't plant Kilayim. And the Mishnah continues, Bachamisha also, so far they're only announcing it, they don't do anything about it yet. Bachamisha also by Kornas and Megillah Bakratim. on the 15th of Adar, they read the Megillah in walled cities. Now, of course, it's also true on the 14th, they read in regular cities, as we just learned in Masechet Megillah. We're not really focusing on that because Tosfos points out the Mishnah is not really giving us a schedule of everything that's going on during Adar. It wants to tell us various things, including things that have to do with Machta Shekel, that take place on the 15th of Adar. So therefore, by the way, it mentions that we lay in the Megillah in Krakim. So we're not going to mention the 14th of Adar at all, because it's not really relevant over here. Anyway, so we do that. The Yotzim Makavitz Tzadrachim, the Basin sends out people to remove thorns and splinters from the roads, as we learned yesterday, that Basin is responsible for making sure that the roads are kept in good order, or the Sakin or Rechoibis, and to fix up the streets and the squares, make sure that there's not potholes in them and whatever. The Lomud HaMikvois, and to measure the Mikvois and make sure that they're large enough and that if there's any mud collecting in them, that they clean it out, or any mud or garbage or whatever, then they clean them out. The Oisim called Tzorchei Rabim, on the 15th of Adar, they also deal with various other Tzorchei Rabim, which the Yerushalmi over there gives a list of things that they deal with at that time. These are things. I mean, they're not things that only can be done on the 15th of Adar, but these are things that if there's a backlog of them, then Beis Din starts working on clearing out the backlog. Things like, for example, Egla Arufa, Soita, and a bunch of other things he mentions over there. Anyway. They also mark the graves, the Yotzim al Kalayim, and they go out to see about the Kalayim and to deal with people who still have Kalayim in their fields. Now, Rashi explains all the other ones that we said in the mission over there, we're not asking why we do them on Chol HaMoed, because, of course, the answer could be that, and in fact, the Yerushalmi there says as much, that you have many of these things could get undone between the 15th of Adar and Chol HaMoed. Let's say, for example, you remove thorns from the roads, fine, but in the month between Tesvav Adar and Chol HaMoed Pesach, you may have new ones, so therefore you have to go and remove them again. And the same thing with all these other ones. The Metzainen HaSakvaras, the plaster may wash away, etc. The question is, the Yotzin al-Kilayim, if the Shluchei Beis Din uprooted the Kilayim that were in people's fields on the 15th of Adar, what do they still have to do on Chol HaMoed? Or a different explanation, there's a Pirush on this Masechta from Talmidei Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris, one of the Balei HaTosfos. So he explains, his Talmidim explain in his name, that the vote is, when we say over there that they do these things on the 15th of Adar, doesn't necessarily mean that every one of them is actually done at that time. It means that's the beginning of the season to start doing them. They may not have actually gotten to them until Chol HaMoed Pesach, but the Yotzin Afal Kalayim means they actually have to go and start dealing with that then, because people are not allowed to have Kalayim in their fields. So what are they doing? They're not going to delay it until Chol HaMoed. So why is our Mishnah mentioning that they're doing it during Chol HaMoed? And the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina. So Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yosi ben Chanina argue why, in fact, you have that those things take place on the 15th of Adar, or specifically the Kilayim, why the 15th of Adar, and again on Chol HaMoed. Chad Omer Kan B'Bocher Kan B'Ofil. One says it depends. You're talking, you have early ripening crops, and you have later ripening crops. So the ones that ripen earlier, the Kilayim are already noticeable by Tesvav Adar, and therefore Beis Din sends people to deal with it then. And the ones that ripen... The ones that ripen later, you're not going to notice them if you go to look at them. Tesvav Adar, it's not going to be noticeable yet. So they wait another month until Chol HaMoed Pesach, and then they go check on them. V'chad Omer, the other one says, kan bezroyim, kan beyirokas. It depends whether you're talking about fields of seeds versus of vegetables. So a couple of mefarshim explain that the difference is zroyim, generally speaking, means plants of which you eat the seeds. So it includes grain, it includes grains, it includes various kinds of beans, etc. As opposed to yirokos, in Gemara terminology, usually means plants of which you eat the leaves. So for example, cabbage and spinach and various other kinds of plants like that. Anyway, so again, zroyim, those ripen earlier, so you would be checking for those. On Tesvav Adar, yirokos, those ripen only later, so therefore you're going to check for them during Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechon, and Loishonu Elashain Nitzan Nikar. Now, this that we're talking about, that you wait until Tesvav Adar, or that you wait until Chol HaMoed to check for them, is only if the flowers of the plants are not noticeable. Aval nitsa nicker, but if the flowers of them are noticeable, and therefore it's very obvious that the field contains kilayim, yotzin alein, then they go out and get and tell the farmers to get rid of them even before those times, because once they're obviously growing like that to the point where you have the flowers of them are clearly visible, then Beis Din is responsible to tell the people to get rid of them. Okay. Okay, why particularly Chalamoyed is a time to go deal with this? Fine, we said you have early ripening and later ripening crops. You have Zroyim versus Yerokas, etc. Fine, but why Davka? We're saying Tesvav Adar, okay, because that's the beginning of the growing season. Why particularly Chalamoyed Pesach? Why not some other time? Why not before or after Pesach? The answer is Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Mishum Schar Pa'ula. The reason is because you have to consider the wages that you're going to have to pay these workers. These workers, these inspectors, are going to go around from field to field looking for kilayim. And as we're going to explain soon in the Gemara, they're going to deal with the kilayim over there in various ways that we'll talk about soon. So therefore, they have to be paid for their time. So when it comes, you think of the amount of that they're going to be paid. Demozli gabon, during Chalamoyed, they'll work cheaper because the rest of the year they have work of their own. So therefore, they're going to say, you want to hire us to be agricultural inspectors, pay us more, pay us something to make it worth our while to do that rather than doing our regular work. Chalamoyed, they're not allowed to do most of their work anyway, so therefore they'll be willing to be hired more cheaply. Tosfos points out, by the way, that later in the Masechta we're going to talk about, it's not so simple to hire workers and pay them for Chalamoyed work anyway. But maybe Tosfos says here, because it's a mitzvah, then maybe therefore it's allowed. In addition, also Tosfos says, we're going to learn in the Gemara over there, that depends if you have a person who doesn't have money to put food on his table, then there's more leeway to allow to hire him and then pay him on Chalamoyed, because he needs money to support his family. Anyway, but the point is, Chalamoyed, people will work more cheaply, therefore Beis Din will use that opportunity to have the fields checked out. Amar of Zvid, V'itamer of Masharshia, Shmamina, we see from that, Ki Yahvin and Lohuschar, when we pay these agricultural inspectors, the ones who are going around and looking for Kilayim, we see from this last point, Mitrumas Halishka Yahvin and Lohu, we pay them out of the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, out of the Trumas HaLishka, out of the money of Machzah Shekel that was collected in the Beis HaMikdash. Usually, we talk about that's used to buy the Korbanos and the other operating expenses of the Beis HaMikdash, as we learned in Masech HaShkolim. But Beis Din is also empowered to use that, to take some of that money and use it for other purposes, for other important Sochei Tzibur. And we learned over there in Shkolim, and the Gemara, it mentions in various other places also, various things, various important Sochei Tzibur that are paid for out of Trumas HaLishka. So Rav Zvid, or Rav Masharshia is saying, this is another one. Evidently, we see that these workers, that these inspectors are paid from the Trumas HaLishka. If you were to say that no, instead what we do is we charge the farmers themselves to pay for these inspectors, well then my nafkala minayu. Then why would we care to dafka have the inspection done during Chalamoyed? Because workers are cheaper there. Then we could just have workers do it the rest of the year and the farmers will have to pay whatever they pay. The fact that we're trying to save money indicates that we're dealing with Trumas HaLishka over there, so therefore we don't want to waste hectish money unnecessarily. So therefore, better we're going to hire the workers doing Chalamoyed when they can get them for cheaper. Okay. The Gemara says, Va'ad kama. Now, how much kilayim does there have to be in a field for there to be a problem? So Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, Ka'oisa Shashaninu. Similar to what we learn in a Mishnah in Kilayim. Now, the Mishnah over there is talking about when you're going to plant, when you're going to go and sow your seeds or plant your vegetables or whatever it is, then you need to make sure. So now, in other words, the idea is, you know, we often say, the Torah is not given to Malachim. So let's say, for example, you have a huge pile of wheat grains that you're planning to grow, and accidentally they've got mixed in there a couple of barley grains. We're not going to expect you to go through it grain by grain and remove the barley grains. So there has to be some kind of limit where we say it's fine. You have a little bit of it in there, then it'll be batel b'roi.
So the Mishnah gives a figure over there. So now Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak is saying that same figure will apply now also when we're talking about after it's already been planted, when it's growing in the field, and now the inspectors are coming around to look. So it's also, we're going to use the same proportion as it says in the Mishnah over there. So it says, kol sa'ah, any sa'ah where a sa'ah contains six kavim, sheyesh ba roiva zera, mimin acher, where you have a quarter of a kav of some other kind of seed in it, you might, then you have to reduce it. So in other words, so a quarter of a kav out of six kav in one saw is 1/24. So if you have 1/24 or more of the mixture is a different species, then you're required to remove it. So now, in other words, what there's two different things. When you're first planting, you have to remove enough of that foreign seed. So again, let's say you had barley grains mixed in with wheat. You're going to be obligated to remove enough of it to bring the proportion of barley down below 1/24. And now we're saying the same thing. When the inspectors are going and looking at the field, if they find that the kelaim in the field is more than 1/24, then they're going to have then they're going to have the farmer remove it. Okay. So the Gemara says, doesn't it say in a braisa, it's actually in the Mishnah in Sholem over there as well, that the Chachamim made a takana that the inspectors, if they find kelayim over there, they declare the entire field hefker as a knas for the owner of the field because he didn't take care of it? And the answer is like kasha, kan kodim takana, kan la'acha takana. There's different stages of the takana of what the Chachamim said to do regarding the kelayim. So the question was, in other words, that you're saying you might, implying, in other words, that you don't have to remove all the kelayim. It's enough to remove some of it. But we're saying you mafia the entire field, implying that it doesn't matter how much kelayim is left. So the answer is it depends on before and after the takana. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. But it's showing how you're oikon mashlichim lefnei behemton. Originally, the takana was that when the inspectors come, if they find kelayim over there, they would pull the kelayim out of the ground and throw it on the ground and in front of the animal's own, in front of the owner's animals. So let's say the inspector comes, finds that a person has wheat and barley planted indiscriminately in his field. So he would take all the barley and rip it out of the ground and throw it on the ground in front of the balabas, and it would be available for the balabas's animals to eat. Well, the whole balabatim smechim shtei smachas. The balabatim, the farmers, had two things to be happy about. Number one, you're weeding our fields for free. We don't have to go do this work ourselves. And number two, you're giving us food that we can use for our animals. So therefore, they didn't have an incentive to make sure that they don't have kelayim in their fields in the future. I guess the original idea was just the fact that you see the shliach beistin going in your field and uprooting plants. Originally, the idea was that person would have enough busha from that he would resolve that in the future he'll do better. But eventually, there came the point when they lost that sense of busha. So his skinu shiu oikunu mashlichim al drachim. So the chachamim instead made a takana that the inspectors should go and throw the kelayim plants onto the roads. So now they're not available for the animals to eat anymore because they get trampled as people walk by. Still, the farmers have what to be happy about. Shemenachin, so they say, and because they're weeding their fields for free, the owner thinks to himself, okay, so I didn't actually intend to plant wheat and barley together. They got mixed in, and I just didn't bother separating them. Now this guy is removing the barley for me for free. So good. Now when I harvest my crop, I'll have only wheat, which is really what I wanted all along. So his skinush yumakirin kolasodakula. At that point, the Chachamim made the takana that they make the whole field hefker. So when we said that they make the whole field hefker, that was the third stage. So now, of course, that'll be an incentive for the person to make sure that he removes his kelayim himself before the inspectors come. The Rambam still paskins that if the inspector finds less than 1/24 kelayim, then of course he's not mafkir the field, because up to 1/24 we said that it's only yamayit. We said he has to reduce it, and up to 1/24 is allowed because it'll be bottle. So therefore, of course, he's not going to touch the field at all. But we're talking about when there's more than 1/24. So now the takana was that they're mafkir the field. So now the farmer is going to be careful to make sure to take care of it before the inspectors come. Getting back now to Dinim of Chol HaMoed, So now, in the previous Mishnah, we learned that you're allowed to water a Beis HaSholchin on Chol HaMoed, which was a field that needs extra irrigation. But you're not allowed, we said you're not allowed to water a Sodah Beis HaBaal, a field that mainly subsists on rainwater. And we said, even a Sodah Beis HaSholchin, we had rules, you don't want to have Tirchi Yisera, so therefore you were allowed to use a spring, but you weren't allowed to use a pool of rainwater and draw water from it, or from a kiln where you need a deep well, etc. So now, continuing on that topic, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Moshchenes Hamayim Me'ilon Le'ilon. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you're allowed to bring water. You're allowed to direct the water from one tree to another. So in other words, one explanation would be, in other words, that you have water in some places in your field, and now what you're doing is like you're digging a shallow channel in order to allow the water to flow from one tree to another. Some of them, of course, explain that, let's say you have one particular tree has a hole in the ground underneath it where a lot of water is collected, so now you're allowed to redirect some of that water in order to take care of the other tree. Rashi explains that this field of trees is like a Sodah Beis HaSholchin, because the trees themselves need a lot of water, and if you don't water them, then they're going to get damaged. A number of the Rishonim learn that actually we're talking about that the field is not even really necessarily a Sodah Beis HaSholchin. We could even be talking about a Sodah Beis HaBaal, but again, because they're trees, and because Moshchenes HaMayim doesn't really involve very much Tircha, then therefore you'd be allowed to. As long as you don't water the whole field. So again, Rashi says, we're talking about the whole field is a Sodah Beis HaBaal. Only the trees themselves count as a Sodah Beis HaSholchin. So therefore, you're allowed to direct the water from one to another in order to water them, but not to water the rest of the field because it's a Sodah Beis HaBaal. Continues the Mishnah, Zroim Shalei Shosu Milifnei HaMoed. If you have seeds that you planted and you didn't give them water before Chol HaMoed, so in other words, before Chol HaMoed, you didn't have a regular schedule of watering them. Lo Yashkim HaMoed, then Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov continues, you're not allowed to water them on Chol HaMoed, since you anyway haven't been watering them on a schedule, so there's not going to be so much hefsed if you don't water them on Chol HaMoed. The Ravid points out, now that's one reason, because there's not going to be much hefsed. The Rambam gives a different reason, because there's too much tircha involved. The fact that you didn't water them before Chol HaMoed means that now when you water them, you're going to have to give them a lot of water to make up for what you missed before, and therefore that would be too much tircha. The Ravid points out that this is only, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, would only be if you didn't water them before Chol HaMoed because you forgot or you were careless or whatever. But if, for example, you were fully intending to, and then there was some kind of oinus, then sure, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would say you could water them on Chol HaMoed. Anyway, it continues the Mishnah. V'chachamim matirin b'zeh o'b'zeh. The Chachamim say both those things are mutter. You're allowed to water the whole field, not just the trees, and you're allowed to water seeds, the plants that you didn't water before Chol HaMoed. So Rashi says the Chachamim of our Mishnah is Reb Meir. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta that Reb Meir says you're even allowed to water a Beis HaBaal. We had a three-way machlutus over there, and we said Reb Meir says that you're allowed to water even a Sodah Beis HaBaal. So the Chachamim arguing with Reb Elazar ben Yaakov would be Reb Meir. So the Braisa says, so the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, im hoisa sodah matunenes mutter. Now, if the field is a very moist field, then it's mutter to water, then it's mutter to water the whole thing. For a couple of reasons, one of them being that then when you water it, since the field is anyway fresh and moist, then your watering is not really going to be so noticeable. You learn indeed a braisa like that. When we say that you're not allowed to water certain kinds of fields on Chol HaMoed, or we said actually the second part of the Mishnah we said was talking about where Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov was saying that you're not allowed to water seeds that you hadn't previously watered before Chol HaMoed. Either again, because like Rashi says, the fact that you didn't water them before means there's not going to be much hefsed if you don't do it now, or like the Rambam said, because there's too much tirpa. So when is that? Like Omer, Lizroim Shleish Shosim L'Kneh Moed. That's what we talked about. That's when you didn't water them before Chol HaMoed at all. Avozroim Shleish Shosim L'Kneh Moed. But if you did water them before Chol HaMoed, Mutal Ashkot in the Moed, then you're allowed to water them again during Chol HaMoed. And the Braisa continues, Vim Hoysa Sodom Tunenes Mutter. If the field is a moist field, then it's mutter to water it on Chol HaMoed. And the Braisa continues, V'ein mashkin sodeh gorid b'moed. Now, on the other hand, you're not allowed to water a field of gorid on Chol HaMoed. So Rashi explains that gorid means that you don't need to water it because it's always been dry. Tosfos explains that it means a sodeh, that gorid is another word for sodeh beis habal. There are some of the Rishonim who learn that gorid means, in other words, it's a field that dried out, so therefore watering it isn't going to do any good, so therefore you're just doing tircha and Chol HaMoed, that's unnecessary. Now, we say here, v'chachamim matirin b'zeh o'v'zeh, the Ritva learns that actually this v'chachamim matirin b'zeh o'v'zeh is not part of the Braisa, but rather a quotation from the Mishnah. In other words, the Braisa was just saying one single opinion that you're allowed to water seeds that you watered before Chol HaMoed, but not ones that you didn't, and that you're allowed to water a sodeh matunenes, and you're not allowed to water a sodeh gorid. So according to the Ritva, all of those three, we have just a Braisa that says that anonymously without saying any dissenting opinion. On the other hand, Tosfos and many other Rishonim do have that the Chacham Matirin Bazeh Bazeh is in fact part of the Braisa, and it means that the Chachamim are allowing the first and the third thing we said in the Braisa. The Tanakhama of the Braisa, which would be Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov of our Mishnah, is saying that you're not allowed, that there's differences what kinds of Zroyim you're allowed to water and what kinds you're not. And the Chachamim would be saying there's no difference. And as far as a sodeh gorid, that again, Rabbi Lezim and Yaakov would be saying you can't water a sodeh gorid on Chol HaMoed, whatever the definition of sodeh gorid is, according to the different possibilities we said. And the Chachamim in the Braisa would be saying that you are. Okay, so that's going to also affect who the halacha is like, as we'll continue in a minute. So the question is who the halacha would be like. We usually say Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Kav Benoki. We usually say Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is not quoted very often in Mishnayos and in Braises, but wherever he does, the halacha is like it. Does that mean the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov over here? Maybe. On the other hand, if we're saying in the Mishnah and in the Braisa that the Chachamim disagree with him, then maybe that's a reason not to paskin like him. But that also, the question is, the next piece of Gemara over here is also going to bear on that, because the question is the next piece that we're going to talk about, is it according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, or is it according to the Chachamim? So the Gemara says, Amar Ravina, Shmamino, we see from this, Hai Tarbitza, a garden where you have flowers or vegetables or what have you growing, Shori v'tarbutza b'chol demoyada. You're allowed to sprinkle it with water on Chol HaMoed. So Rashi explains, in other words, that Marbitzin is less than Mashkin. Mashkin would mean that you're watering it a great deal. Here, Marbitzin is more that you're watering it a little bit. You're sprinkling some water on it. So you're allowed to do that because Sodeh Gorid my timer. Because after all, why, according to the Chachamim in the previous Braisa, would you be allowed to water a sodeh gorid? Because even though it's dry, nevertheless, the afla mashavi lacharfa. Because what it'll accomplish is that plants that would have grown later are now going to grow and be ripening earlier. Hokinami afla mashavi lacharfa. The same thing is true with a garden. That when you're sprinkling it with water, that helps promote the growth of the plants and making them grow a little faster, and therefore you're allowed. So in other words, Rashi explains, in a sodeh gorid, we're saying there's no hefsed if you don't water it. Such a field usually doesn't need rainwater at all. And still we say the Chachamim allow you to water it on Chol HaMoed. So by the same thing with the gina, with the tarbitza, even though you're allowed to sprinkle water on it, even though without that water there won't be a hefsid, you're only doing it in order to help the plants grow a little faster. Now, on the other hand, though, first of all, the question is what Ravina is saying, does it fit with what the Chachamim are saying or what Rabbi Lezman Yaakov is saying? There's different ways of understanding it. That will also affect the question of whether the halacha is like him or not. Also, Tosfos brings that what Ravina is saying fits with what Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is saying. That a tarvitza would be that you already watered it before, and he's saying you're allowed to water. So you didn't plant it yet, but you're allowed to water it now on Chol HaMoed, where the plan is you're only going to plant seeds in it after Chol HaMoed. So he holds that, like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, he holds that a tarbitza is also a place. You're preparing it for planting. You already watered it, and therefore you'd be allowed to water it during Chol HaMoed. But then, according to that, then, when the Gemara says, my timer, it's not really asking for a reason. It's questioning him. How is it? At least by Zroim Sheshosim Olifnei HaMoed, you're accomplishing something. You're making that the crops grow faster. How are you accomplishing that by a tarbitza where you haven't even planted it yet? So in that case, then that would mean that we don't follow Ravina. So that also affects the question whether we follow Rav Elazar ben Yaakov or whether we follow the Chachamim. And in turn, whether we follow Ravina or whether or not, has the Gemara slugged up Ravina or is Ravina giving a reason for his din? The different Gersois, and then the result is different understandings among the Rishonim who the Halacha is like. Okay, continues the Gemara. Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa. Mabitzin Soda Lovan Bashvias. You're allowed to sprinkle water on a Soda Lovan. So Rashi translates, usually Soda Lovan means a grain field. Rashi translates that it means a base abal. It means, okay, so we're talking about a grain field, which is a base abal. It doesn't usually need irrigation. But nevertheless, we're saying you're allowed to sprinkle water on it during Shvias. Avaloi b'moyed, but not chalamoyed. So the Gemara says, "Well, Tanya, my bitin bein mamoyed bein mishvias." Well, don't we have another braisa that says you're allowed to do such a thing to sprinkle water, both chalamoyed and shvias? And the answer is, "Amar Rav Huna, like Kasha, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Harabanan." Again, you have the two different opinions in our Mishnah. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, who says that you're not allowed to water the entire field, only the trees themselves. So therefore, he would say you're not allowed to do it during chalamoyed. On the other hand, the Chachamim, who we said is Reb Meir, are allowing you to water the whole field, so therefore they would allow you to sprinkle water on it as well. The Gemara says, Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa. Tosfos, by the way, discusses over here, does Harbotza mean only sprinkling a little bit of water over here? Or is it in fact that maybe Harbotza is the same as Mashkin? And the difference is, Tosfos says that by Beis HaShochan, we call it Mashkin because such a field needs irrigation. By a Beis HaBal, which doesn't really need irrigation, they just have to do it once in a while, then it can be called Marbitin. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tanya Idach, we learn in another Braisa, Marbitin Soda Lovan Erev Shvias, you're allowed to Marbitin, again, it means sprinkling water, or according to Tosfos, maybe it even means full watering, a Soda Lovan, a grain field, Erev Shvias, you're allowed to do that the year before Shemitah, Kadesh Yetu Yerokas Shvias, because you want that vegetables will be able to grow in it during Shemitah, so you want the ground to be moist enough that vegetables will be able to grow in it. But those vegetables will have been starting to grow during the sixth year, and therefore that's fine. The loyoid, and not only that, Elisha Mabitzin, Soda Lovan Mashvias, Kadesh Yetu Yerokas Lamatzoy Shvias. You even allowed to do this Mabitzin in a field during Shemitah in order that vegetables will come out and grow on Matzoy Shvias. The year after Shemitah, what you can't do, Rashi says, is to water the field in order that it was to water the field in order that plants should grow in it, to water it during Shemitah itself. So plants will grow in it during Shemitah itself. That would be awesome, as we learned a few days ago about various malachas that are and aren't allowed during in a field on Shvias. So even we said maybe Daraisa, only some of them are also, but Darabanan, there are many other ones that are also as well. So here, where you're doing it during Shemitah in order for the plants to grow during Shemitah, then it would be awesome.
Even though in the enjoyment for those parents would be for regular people during next year, even though
that's what we're saying. For next year they're allowed. So if you're now watering the field now because you want to prepare it for that vegetables are gonna grow in it next year, that would be fine. But for them to grow this year, there is, by the way, there's a din d'rabbanan that vegetables that grow by themselves, which are called svichim, that vegetables and plants and whatnot that grow by themselves, which are called svichim, you're not allowed to, in other words, like you have, typically you have, let's say you harvest your field, some seeds fall as you're harvesting. And then you, and then the following year they grow. Those are called tzvichim midrabanan. You're not allowed to eat them because there's a concern that people are going to actually go and plant them deliberately and then claim that they fell there by accident. So, so realistically, if your rokas are growing in this field during Shemitah, you're really not going to be able to eat them anyhow. Okay. The Mishnah says, sudden is ishrus v'esachborim. You're allowed to trap ishrus, which the Gemara is going to explain means weasels or moles. The esachborim or mice, misdeya ilan, from a field of trees where they go and they dig in the dirt and they eat the roots of the plants and whatever and damage them, or misdeya lavan, or from a grain field. Either one, kedarka, but moed of ashvias, you're allowed to do it in the normal way during chalamoyed or during shmita. During shmita, the point is, even though you're improving the soil, you're removing rocks there, for example, when you're trying to get rid of these creatures, you're allowed to do that. From a wheat field, from a tree field, you're allowed to do it normally because they're going to cause tremendous damage to the trees. Therefore, you don't have to make a shinui. Or misdei alavan shalei kedarkei, but from a grain field, you have to do it in an unusual way. And we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow what that unusual way is. And the Gemara continues, the Mishnah continues, or Makoranis appears of a moyed. If you have a breach in the wall around your field or garden or whatever, then you're allowed to, so it fell down a little bit, you're allowed to Makorin, which is like you give a temporary fix to it during Chalamoyed, or Vashvias, Bernakadauke. If it's during Shemitah, then you can build it normally because even though it looks like you're trying to protect your fruit, you're still allowed to because you're really doing it in order to keep, let's say, animals from invading your field or whatever. So the Gemara says, my ishus, what exactly, what kind of creature is this creature that we're saying ishus? Amar of Yehuda, beria she'en lo inayim. It's a creature that doesn't have eyes and digs around in the dirt. So it's a creature like a mole or some related species like that. Moles actually have eyes, but they're covered with fur and they don't really use them very much. They mostly live underground, so they don't really need their eyes. Amar Rava Bar Yishmael, the Itamer of Yema Bar Shlemya, Maikra, where is a Pasuk where we see that that's what an Ashes is? The Pasuk says, the Pasuk is talking about how Rishoyim should be punished and disappear. K'moy Shablu, like a snail, Temes Yaloch, that goes and melts away. So Rashi describes, let's say the snail is taken out of its shell, then it starts falling apart and then the whole thing dissolves, the whole thing melts. A nafel ishus, like the stillbirth, like the ishus that falls, like the mole that falls, bal chazush and dies, loy chazush shamash, never having seen the sun, because it lives its whole life underground, and then when it gets killed by the trap or whatever, then it never saw the sun in its lifetime because it was always below ground. And the same way, David HaMelech is saying that Rishoyim should suffer that kind of fate. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, sudden is the issue of Svesach Borim, Misdei Alavan, Misdei Ilan Kedavgoi. You're allowed to, as we said in the Mishnah, trap these issues, these mold and mice, Misdei Alavan, and from a wheat field, or Misdei Ilan, or from a tree field, Kedavgoi, in the normal way, as the Tanakhama had said. Or Machrivin Chorin Nemalim, you're also allowed to, on Chalamoyed, destroy anthills. Because again, the ants go and take some of the crops, some of the grain, and then eat it or whatever, and you want to get rid of them, so you're allowed to destroy their anthills. Ketan machriven, what does that mean? You destroy them. Reb Shimon, I'm the Elomer, maybe offer mechorzeh, but no, some of the chorzeh, what you do is, now they didn't have insecticides and things like that in those days, you had to have some other way, so you take some of the dirt from one anthill with some of the ants in it, and you put it into the other anthill, and now the ants start fighting. They don't recognize each other's smell and each other's chemical signature. So they end up choking each other, they end up fighting with each other because they smell something which seems to them like an invader. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yema Bar Shlemi, Mishmei Da'abaya, this method of getting rid of ants only works for who decoy betray every nara, only if the ant hills are on two different sides of a river, because then the ants are not able to get across. So therefore they're never exposed to this particular smell or the particular chemical signature of those other ants, and therefore they don't recognize them and they see them as a danger. That also requires, though, for that to work, that there's no bridge in between, because if there's a bridge, then the ants can cross that. Not only a bridge, there can't even be a gamla there, which is a single plank bridge. And not only a gamla, there can't even be a matzra, which is an even narrower plank where to go across, you actually need to hold on to a rope that's stretched out along the side of the plant. So if there's any of those kinds of things, the ants are able to get across every so often, and therefore they'll recognize the smells of the other one, and therefore they won't attack them. Ad kama ad parsa. How far away can they be one from the other, where if there's a river in between and no bridge, then they won't recognize, up to a parsa. But Rashi explains, if they're less than a parsa away, then even if there's no river, then even if there's a river and no bridge and no metzu and whatever, still the fact that it's within a parsa, they'll still recognize the smell of the other ones and not attack them, and the method won't do you any good. Or Tosfos gives a different explanation that if they're further away than a parasa and there's a river, then they're not going to recognize each other's smell. The point is, in other words, this is practical advice. You're trying to get rid of these ants. Be aware. You have to be aware of all these factors. If you're going to try to use the method of having some of the ants attack the others, then you need to know about these details and know when it's going to work and when not. Okay. Everyone.